Thank you, Ray. Good morning, everybody. So I'm a bit sad because this is the last day of our program. And anyway, today I would like to tell you, to present you a very simple model for elegance and transport, a very basic one, which is able to reproduce some basic feature of elegant transport. And this model, I've been working on this model during this program, and so I'm glad to present you here the result of this model. So first of all, I would like to recall you some basic feature of elegant transport. We have seen several talk about elegance and transport, which have emphasized the key role of the saltation transport. I mean, the particle, the main mode of transport of the particle is called the saltation, the rebound over the particle bed, and makes a jump over the bed and can eventually eject particles from the bed. I can show you an animation, of course. So this is a kind of type of motion you can see in a windmill, for example. So you can see the rebound of the particle. You can see some ejection. And so the... Just to stop. So the saltation process is a key role to understand the basic feature of elegance and transport. And recently, experiments showed that the saltation transport can exhibit very different features depending on the nature of the bed. So you can have a classical bed made of particles, a sun bed, for example, but also you can transport particles over a rigid bed when there is no particle can be ejected from the bed. And recent experiments have shown that if you look at, for example, the maximum capacity of transport, versus the two type of bed, classical particle bed or an rigid bed. Here I plot the mass flow rate, so in dimension unit, you can see, gram per second, as a function of the shear velocity, which calculates the wind strength of the flow. And here are the data of the erodible bed. And here, this is for the rigid bed. So you can see that for given shear velocity, the transport is much more efficient on the rigid bed. And also you have different scaling law. So for the erodible, as we have seen, with the mass flux just scale linearly with the shear stress, or shear shear number, or quadratically with the shear velocity. And in the case of rigid bed, you have a different scaling. And you have a scaling, if you look at it as a function of the shear parameter, you have something which is very roughly as shear stress to the power 3/2. So like in the case in water transport. So, and this difference is due to the saltation properties of the saltation trajectory. And here we have measured this experiment, the mean saltation length in both cases. So this has been already emphasized that on an erodible bed, the mean saltation length is invariant with the wind strength or the shear velocity. And on a rigid bed, we have a completely different behavior, dramatic difference, where the mean saltation length increase drastically with the shear velocity. And we have a simple scaling, the mean saltation length, in that case, scale linearly with the shear stress. So we've been inspired by this result to try to understand this this major difference between a transport on a rigid and a erodible bed, returning to a very basic model based on periodic trajectories. So the question, can we simply describe saltation transport in terms of periodic trajectories? That is, so to look for periodic trajectories. Are periodic trajectories a solution of that kind of system? So this is the model I will present you. So it's a simple model based on a Lagrangian description for the particle, and of course a Eulerian description for the fluid. And we start with the most simplest situation, with a rigid bed, so no possibility of ejection of particles, and a rigid and bumpy bed. So the model is quite simple. So for the particle motion, so we differentiate the ascending particle and the descending particle, and we just write the acceleration in the x direction. X direction is in the direction of the windbow, and the y direction, just acceleration along x and along y, expressed in terms of the velocity, the horizontal velocity, and the derivative of the horizontal velocity with respect to y. And so the force acting on the particle, that is the drag of the wind, so here the velocity of the wind, and here the velocity of the particle. And in the vertical direction, you have also drag, and also the gravity. Yeah, I forgot to tell you that every variable has been made dimensionless. So the velocity by the square root of gd, which is the gravity, d is the diameter. So that's why you have one here for the gravity. And you can write exactly the same equation for the descending motion. The drag, we take a classical relation of the drag. You have a term for low Reynolds number, classical term for low Reynolds number, which depends on the viscosity of the fluid, and a form drag for a large Reynolds particle number.
U is here a constant or a function of what?
Sorry?
U is here a constant or a function of what?
No, all quantity has a function of y.
So I don't quite understand, why is the x acceleration given in terms of, so cy is the y velocity of the particle?
Yeah, cy is the y direction. It's just the acceleration written in terms of the derivative of the velocity with respect to the y. I just want to write the system to write all the variables as a function of y to integrate the system between the surface of the bed and the maximum height of the particle. It's just a rewriting of the acceleration. And then I can write also the position of the particle with respect to the x direction of the particle as a function of y. So the velocity of the particle, the horizontal velocity, can be as well expressed as the derivative of the x position with respect to y times the vertical velocity. And the same for the position for the descending particle. So we have six ordinary first order differential equation for the particle motion. And then we should there is one equation less. This is for the fluid flow. So in case we use a very simple model, a classical mixing length turbulence model to model the flow. So in case that there is no particle in the flow, so we have the classical mix it tells us that the derivative of the velocity with respect to y is just inversely proportional to the height of the surfaces. And here you have the square root of the distance shield parameter. So in case the particle is laden with particle, so the shear stress, the total shear stress, so we look for steady and fully developed turbulent state. So in that case, the total shear stress is invariant with the height, and the total shear stress can be decomposed into the shear stress, the airborne shear stress, and the particle shear stress. And in that case, so the equation for the fluid, you replace the distance shear stress by the airborne shear stress, which is the difference between the distance shear stress and the particle shear stress. And the last part of the work is to calculate the shear stress as a function of the probabilities of the particle trajectory. So now we assume that we don't have a single periodic trajectory, but we have an ensemble of particles with periodic trajectory, with exactly the same periodic trajectory. And we define so two concentrations, the concentration for the upward particle and a concentration for the downward particle. And then we can define Eulerian quantities for the particle phase. So the particle average velocity is just the mean, the average between the downward and upward velocity weighted by the concentration. And we can also write the particle shear stress, so as a function of the two species, the downward and the upward species. And we can write, so in particle simple form, the particle shear stress, it's just the difference between the downward horizontal particle and the upward horizontal particle times this quantity, which is the vertical flux, the upward vertical flux at the ground. Because as we have only one trajectory, I mean, one particular trajectory, the vertical flux is invariant with the height. So there is an additional parameter here of the problem, which is the vertical flux at the ground. So just to sum up the set of the equations, so we have 7 fourth order differential equation. So for this quantity, the horizontal velocity for the two species, downward and upward, the vertical one, the position, and for the free flow, which should be resolved from the surface up to the height of the particle. And we have 3 additional parameters. This is the height of the trajectory, the length of the trajectory, and as I told you, this is another unknown parameter. This is the vertical mass flux of the bed, or in other words, the quantity of particle in the saltation layer. So to solve this problem, we need 10 boundary conditions, and continuity relation equation provide us with 7 conditions. So just continuity that at the top of the trajectory, the horizontal velocity of the particle should be equal. At the top of the particle, the vertical one are 0, and also the continuity. So it's just so the particle start at x equals 0 and arrive at x equals L, which is the length of the trajectory, and also continuity for the position at x. And we take a non-slip boundary velocity for the free flow. And then, so we have 7 boundary conditions, so and we need 10. So, and up to now, I don't speak about the rebound, and the rebound is a key, in fact, is a key feature of this model. So, when you have a rebound, here I have a rigid and bumpy bed. And if you look at the impact of a particle on this bed, so you will have a rebound, and you will have a law which will characterize the rebound. And so we can compute really easily from with VM simulation this kind of collision problem. And due to the roughness of the surface, if we compute so we can define two coefficients to define the rebound law. So the restitution of E, which is just the ratio between the amplitude of the incoming rebound, the amplitude of the rebound velocity, divided by the amplitude of the incoming velocity. And if we, from the computation, we have a coefficient which varies with the angle of impact. This is a decreasing function of theta. And we can model but, this function by two parameters, A and B, which can be drawn from the simulation, assuming, for example, a given dissipation from the for the binary collision. And we can define also another coefficient, which is the effective dissipation in the y direction. And the key feature here is again a function of theta due to the roughness, and it's plotted here. And you can see, so it's also a decreasing function of theta. But the main feature is that you can see that this coefficient can be greater than 1. What does that mean? Is that mean for grazing angle, you can have a great transfer of horizontal momentum in the vertical direction. And this is a key point to have a saltation process. If you have, for example, a specular rebound, you will not have a saltation process because the height of the trajectory will decay in course of time. So this is really a key process to have the saltation. You should have a vertical restitution coefficient, which is at least bigger than 1, to balance the dissipation due to the vertical drive. So this collision law provided two additional conditions. So finally, I have only one free parameter in my problem. So this is the two additional conditions for the rebound. And in the problem, I remain with only one free parameter, the vertical flux, which should be prescribed. And this is the quantity of the Hamiltonian particle I put in my system. So I can solve. So we have, this is a simple a two-point boundary value problem, which has been solved by, for example, MATLAB routine. And here are the results. So here are the result for a given shield parameter. So I take some definite property for the particle. So a 0.23 millimeter as for the experiment. The density ratio, which is 2,200. And here I compute so the steady trajectory vector for different vertical mass flux of different concentration, or I express the number of particles in my state by the mass holdup. It's just the concentration integrate over the height of the particle. So here I apply the different trajectory, where then increase the mass holdup, and can see at the beginning for slow mass, very weak mass holdup, the trajectory is almost unchanged. And when I increase the mass holdup, the trajectory is smaller and smaller. And this is it's just due because when I had particle in my flow, I have more feedback on the flow. So the flow the velocity of the flow is reduced. So the trajectory is smaller and smaller. So it's not really surprising. So from the trajectory, I can deduce the height, the length and the height. So at the beginning, for a small mass holdup, so I do not have any, it's almost a constant. There is no feedback as the concentration is low. I have no feedback on the flow. So the length and the trajectory are almost constant. And when I had more and more particles in the flow, of course, the height and the length decrease. And then just to explain, so this is the wind profile. So when I increase the number of particles in the flow, you see the wind profile, the height as a function of, this is the velocity as a function of height. So the different profile when I increase the mass holdup, so the wind flow is weaker and weaker. And the same for the particle velocity. So this is the profile of the particle velocity. When I increase the mass holdup, of course, there's a path. So I have a rather a straight profile, and the particle velocity decreases with the amount of particles in the flow. So, and from this quantity, I can plot the mass flow rate as a function of the mass holdup. So, and of course, when I, at the beginning, when I increase the number of particles, the velocity is almost unchanged. So, the mass flow rate, the mass holdup times the velocity of the particle. So at the beginning, I expect to have a mass flow rate which increases. But when I increase the mass holdup, the particle velocity decreases. So I expect to have an optimum, a maximum mass flux for a given mass of mass. So, and I get this kind of curve. And for a given mass flux, for example, I have two steady, two different steady position, steady states. One for a rather weak mass holdup with a large velocity, another one with a great mass holdup and small velocity. So, and we expect that the second branch is unstable. This curve is very analogous to the curve we can have in traffic flow, in the relation of the flux of vehicle versus the concentration. And we have that kind of curve. And the part where the mass flux is decreasing with the concentration is known to develop a traffic wave. And so we expect in that branch we have a deposition. And so now we can look at how I call this maximum the maximum capacity of the flow for a given shield parameter. This is for a given shield parameter. And now I can look at how this maximum evolves in the shield parameter. So this is the mass flow rate as a function of the mass holdup. So for different shield parameter. So of course, when I increase the shield parameter, I increase the maximum capacity of the flow rate. And then I can plot the maximum capacity here as a function of the shield parameter. And I've got a law which is with a power which is 3/2. So this is a law we obtain experimentally. And we can try to compare with, why we have such scaling. So the mass flow is just the concentration multiplied by the velocity integrate over the height. So in the case of rigid bed, so both the concentration of the particle are equal, independent of the height. So it's just the product of the concentration at the base times the velocity at the base times the height of the flow. This is the height of the particle. And what we found, the concentration is invariant with the shield parameter. The velocity scale with the square root of the shield and the height and the length scale with the shield parameter. So we have a mass flow rate which scale as a shield as a power 3/2. So, and we can try to compare the prediction of the model with our experiment. And here I plotted the particle velocity at the surface. So I plot two different curves which is predicted by the model. This is the particle velocity, so as a function of the square root of the shield, when the concentration is low. So when there is no feedback of the particle on the flow. And here, this is the particle velocity at the maximum capacity. So it's less, of course. And here, I plot our measurement, our data. This is the experiment, and which have been made for low concentration, so where there is no feedback on the wind. And it's not so bad. You can see that at least this is the two curve which this is the maximum, and so we have a rather good agreement due to the simplicity of the model.
So yeah? where do you measure this particle velocity?
In wind tunnel, on the rigid bed.
At which y location?
At the base. But as I showed you, the vertical velocity, and also this is seen in the experiment, is quite vertical. So, and here, this is the plot of the particle velocity at the surface, the mean particle velocity at the surface. Okay. But I could do the same for the average velocity. Mm-hmm. It's the same. Okay, and then we can look at the maximum capacity of transport. Also, this is a prediction of the model. And this is the data. So we have quite good agreement with this simple model. And here I plot the mass flow rate on the particle bed. So the question, if I have 5 minutes, 3 minutes, okay.
4 minutes.
4 minutes. So this was the simplest situation with a rigid bed, so simple situation. And can we apply this simple model for satellite, or classical saltation transport of an erodible bed. So how to account for the splash? As we've seen in a couple of talks, so in the splash process is an important process in transport of an erodible bed. So I can show you just, this is a model collision experiment, so of a collision. So you have this splash process. So how to account for this splash process? So the splash process can be decomposed in two stages. You have the rebound and you have the ejected particle. And as for the case on a rigid bed, the rebound has almost the same properties. So you can characterize the rebound of the particle by two coefficients, the effective restitution coefficient and the effective restitution coefficient for the Y component. And we have, this is an experimental result, and we have exactly the same feature. So we have coefficient with decrease with the angle of inclination. And here the coefficient, you have also coefficient, which can be drawn for experiments. So I'm not exactly the same but for rigid bed, but these are values which are, erodible bed is more dissipative. So classically, if you compare with the case of rigid bed, you have more dissipation in case of erodible bed, but you have exactly the same feature, a decreasing restitution coefficient as a function of angle. And for the Y component, you can see for crescent angle, you have a coefficient which is greater than 1, which is important to sustain saltation transport.
3 minutes on.
Yeah. And so the other part of the splash, of the collision, this is splash. And it has been emphasized several times during the week. So the number of ejected particles as a function of the velocity is a linear function of the incoming velocity. And you have a kind of threshold. So below a critical velocity, which has a definite value, there is no ejection. So to have a steady, fully developed state, so the particle velocity is constrained by the splash function and should be of the order of this critical velocity. Otherwise, you have an increase of particle. If the particle velocity is above this critical, you have an increase of the particle in your system. So this is an additional constraint which fixes your velocity. So now in our model, you don't have any free parameter, and we have a constraint on the velocity, and we can solve against the trajectory. So we have a periodic trajectory, and the trajectory, as there is a strong constraint on the velocity, so the trajectory is invariant with the shear stress, with the shear parameter. And so the length of the particle and the height is as well independent of the shear stress. And here I plot our measurement about the median wind tunnel, about, well, fairly good agreement for the. So this is the average height and length measured in the experiment. And we quite fair good agreement. And if we look at the concentration as a function of the shear stress, as in the experiment, we have a linear increase with the shear. And if we look at the mass flow rate as a function of the shear, so as the velocity is constant, so to have the mass rate is more or less the constant times the velocity. So you have still a linear relation with the shear parameter for the dimension mass flux. So here the prediction of the model, here's the experiment. I come to the conclusion. So I just show you a very basic model based on a periodic trajectory of a single family of periodic trajectory. And we can have a rather good prediction for the main feature of saltation transport of an erodible bed, but also of a rigid bed. And so what are the perspective? So I think we can extend this model to bedload transport in water. So there's no reason not to do it. And also, as this model is very simple, we can extend this model to unsteady situation, to look at the relaxation process. For example, from the relaxation process when you have a transport from a rigid bed to an erodible bed, Or in a monogenic situation. So I think that although this model is really simple, but on a single family of trajectory, can give some quite quantitative prediction for different situation of excitation transport. So thank you for your attention.
Well, I'm sure we have no questions because we just heard the last word in the only transport.
So I'm trying to reconcile this with a picture of the dynamics.
Yeah.
So the way I would describe the dynamics, and you'll tell me if this is wrong.
Yeah.
Is I'd say you have a particle, it has it's above the bed, it has a velocity and position at a particular time.
Yeah.
So you can Poincaré of that particle.
Yeah.
There's a dynamical system underlying it, probably a distributed dynamical system. And so therefore there's likely to be a strain contractor which will have embedded in it various quasi-periodic orbits, and that you are looking at one or a set of those quasi-periodic orbits in this theory. Is that sort of a correct way of embedding what you're doing in the larger picture?
Yeah, I'm not sure to understand completely what you say, but I think so. I look at periodic trajectory, steady periodic trajectory. Mm-hmm.
I think what you say is we're looking at the periodic trajectory.
Yeah.
So there is only one periodic trajectory.
Yeah. Only one periodic. Yeah. Given. Yeah.
I mean,
or a set of parameters.
Well,
for example,
which
in that form, I have two parameters: the shear parameter, which gives you the strength of the flow, and the number of particles in your flow. Because on a rigid bed, it's not fixed.
I mean, what you typically see with it viewed as a dynamical system is that there's a family of quasi-periodic trajectories, and it is in fact possible. There's a technology for recovering statistical properties of the strain contractor as an expansion in quasi-periodic trajectories.
We have finally. A single parameter trajectory is not very highly.
Trajectory is usually unsafe.
Yeah. We did not study the stability of this trajectory. So I show you there is two branches. For a given mass trajectory, I have two steady trajectories. And we guess that one is unstable. So the one in the second part of the curve.
Did you try different expression for the drive coefficients and especially do you really need the viscous term to get this result?
Okay. The viscous correction?
Yes. Did you try to switch this off?
If we look at the value of the particle Reynolds number, this is in the transition region. So both terms are the same order of magnitude.
In terms of scaling and
so on. Well, the scaling, I think it won't change at all. It's just if you want to have a quantitative prediction, you should consider the drive form and the viscous drive to have a quantitative prediction. But I don't think if you have only a viscous drive or a form drive, I think you get exactly the same scaling. Yeah. I guess. You agree with me? No?
I hear silence, so go ahead.
I was surprised that collisions were not introduced, given that Jim Jenkins was one of the co-authors. But, no, but seriously, so what would be, would there be ineffective collisions which could go pretty, perhaps part of the way to what Tom was talking about? The ineffective collisions part of
it. Yeah.
I was thinking also that if there are collisions, then
the picture is completely wrong.
Yes, in some sense. But the flux, for instance, the upward flux, which remained one of your open variables, will now be constrained by other things, possibly. You know, like a balance of energy or something.
In the case of on a rigid bed, I have to prescribe the number of particles in my flow. So this is,
sure.
I mean, experimentally, so usually, experimentally, we fix the mass flow rate.
Yeah, you see.
But I have always a free parameter. But of course, we can expect that the collision can occur and change completely the picture. And yeah, we're.
Well, my question was also related to the stability of the individual trajectories. So you, I think what you showed was that if you increase the mass flux or reduce the mass flux, then you get this one stable, one unstable trajectory,
yeah, yeah.
Right? Did you check your particle trajectory stability with regard to the other parameters in the?
No, I didn't carry out any stability analysis.
Yeah. So you solve these ODEs as a numerically, I assume.
Yeah.
Numerically. Okay. So you could specify, for example, different initial conditions, and then see if your solution after a certain number of orbits will come back to
the. Yeah, I can. I mean, it's possible to test the stability.
Yeah, yeah.
And I guess the second function is unstable, because when you increase the mass order, you decrease the mass flow rate.
Right.
So we expect that this branch is instable, give rise to, like for traffic flows, some traffic wave, or some jamming, and then some deposition.
I have a question for you, Alexander, about you said this might be applicable to water. Yeah, bed load transport. I know that there are several models for bed load transport in new water that rely on saltation, which is what your model relies on, obviously. But saltation appears to be quite unimportant in bed load transport in water. So,
Hello. There is different kind of bed load transport, but for the weak bed load transport, I think this is saltation. There is no the splash effect, but these are jam. And I think we can apply this. So the weak regime of bed load, I think, is equivalent to saltation transport on a rigid bed. Because in water, the splash is inefficient. Mm-hmm. So
okay.
I guess we have this. That's why we have the same type of scaling in the rigid bed. The mass flow scale has a few parameters, the power 3R. And we have exactly the same scaling in water for the bed load.
Questions? You solve for the particle velocity on the upward trajectory and then on the downward trajectory.
Yeah, yeah.
And you showed us some velocity profiles.
Yeah.
Where those include both upward and downward.
Yeah, this is the average velocity.
That's
yeah.
The average of the two.
Yeah. At the given height, I take the upward and downward velocity and make an average.
And how different are the upward and downward velocity profiles?
They're different because these are not symmetric. You can see that is not. You can see that it's not completely symmetric. So there's a tiny difference between the up one and down one. It's not because there is an acceleration, the drag of the wing.
Mm-hmm. I hear.
I hope I can formulate the question correctly. I think it's really exactly right. But going back to what you said about the different trajectories, and what we see in reality is a wide variety of different trajectories. And I think it's very interesting that you look at periodic trajectories.
So,
but what could we think of the real picture as being? A multitude of quasi-periodic trajectories that basically goes from one to the other. And,
So this periodic trajectory is meant to be the average trajectory, and we know that in experiments there is a dispersion of trajectory. So we have first developed a model taking into account the dispersion, assuming a Gaussian distribution of the velocity of the particle. But this is just to simplify, so a single trajectory, which is meant to represent the average trajectory of all possible trajectories. And the weakness of the model, if we look at in detail, for example, the variation of the concentration with the height, so we have large disagreement because with only a single trajectory. And if your family of trajectories is different, you will have a concentration profile which is very different. So exponentially, with a decreasing, exponentially decreasing a concentration profile, and with this model, it's rather uniform. So, but we can expect it to replicate all the features in the just a single family of trajectories.
Time for a couple more.
Is it possible to think of the trajectory as a deterministic map between the final and initial velocities?
Yeah.
And the reflection process is not a deterministic map.
Yeah, so it's a rebound. I mean,
yeah. And the potential point say you get a.
Yeah, I see. Yeah.
And this is the problem when you think of it that way.
Okay, I understand.
You always have unstable orbits.
So one can actually do a Fourier analysis. You take a small area in phase space around the initial and final trajectories and see how it spreads as it goes through.
We can map to the logistic map and look at the stability. But you think it is unstable for any kind of fluctuation?
Well, I mean, so, you know, you found white, you know. I don't know if this is like the typical dynamical system. A typical dynamical system of this dimensionality, you would see periodic orbits, which you've identified one clearly, maybe two. But you would also see that if you make a small perturbation in those orbits, that you know it's unstable. And so the structure in the whole phase space can be very complex. But often you can actually get rather good results in the standard amount of quasi-periodic trajectories which kind of dominate the system.
We can
probably have time for one more clarification, Jim?
Yeah. Alexander, recall that you solved the initial value problem and converged to the orbits for the erodible bed. Is that not fair to say that? The particle bit. So that,
I mean,
Alexander's also phrased it as an initial value problem, and converged to the periodic solution.
It is not always the case that the orbits are unstable. That is what usually happens. Yeah. It is also true that even if the orbits are unstable, there are many numerical techniques that can identify them, and so if you use one of those.
I didn't think about that. That's another way to analyze.
Time for one more, Marco, I think you're up. But one more quick question, if maybe the next speaker could.
Yeah, okay. Most of the saltation models that I know of in water, a crucial thing is the way the bed is thought. You put all the particles in the bed like a line.
Yeah.
So what happens if you just move them around some position so that you have different impacts on the bed, because some particles will be slightly higher and slightly lower than the average bed, something more similar to the reality, let's say. And the other thing is, shouldn't you include also the lift if you want, especially if you think of moving to water?
So coming back to your first question, I think you can model the modification of the roughness of the base, and this is just through the collision. So this is the way if you model, the law I showed you for the collision, it just reflects the bumpiness and the roughness of the surface because you have a variation with the angle. And so if you mention variation of the roughness of the bed, we have to change the system. So regarding to the second question, you can of course include the lift, but I don't think that it's measure. I mean, it wouldn't change the feature.
Should something like a turbine lift from, especially in water?
I think the particles are too small.
If you want a suspension regime, you could have a turbine lift. but at least for Lyon case, so this is equivalent case in the shift, the relative normal we look at the 2016 to be significant.
I think we should thank Alexander again and probably stop there. I think we have a fairly seamless transition. I don't want to curse it. Our next speaker is Hezi Yitzhak, who's going to talk about transverse instability of megaminerals.